yourself. She says, she's bomb.com. And what? Am I lying? I am. No. But what? Am I lying?
No.
Thank you. So see, so we like, well, I wanted, I'm going to ask a couple of questions to give you to prompt for a response. One of the in the very beginning of Dr. Peterson Smith's talk, he talked about that St. Louis is this generation's Birmingham. Yeah. I'm in it. And so I'd like to hear your response to that from where you sit. I'd like you to speak to it from the different intersection from which you are. Okay? Yes. How do you want to do this? Yeah, we can't hear, so come on.
All right. I just want to begin by saying I am deeply, deeply humbled to be sitting on this panel with these amazing panelists, and thank you so much, Doctor, for an incredible talk. I got angry as you were speaking, very angry, but I had goosebumps first and foremost, and it's just because my whole life, the first thing I mentioned to people when they asked me where I'm from, and I mentioned to them it's Palestine. Every single white person, the majority of all the white people that I've ever met in my life, go, "What's Palestine?" Yep. I'm 25 years old and that still happens. And so then that contradicts with the majority of people of color or of different faiths. And the way the conversation kind of unfolds at that point, and when I say I'm Palestinian, all of a sudden there's this sort of like connection I've made with people. So when I knew that this panel was happening, and I'm incredibly humbled to be here, but it just spoke volumes to me as to what it is that I had been experiencing my whole life. I think I want to begin by saying that I'm privileged in a way because although I am Palestinian, to someone who doesn't know who I am, they think I was just white passing, and so that actually has brought me into lots of conversations I never wanted to be a part of. Meaning some of the most racist people that live in my own community have felt comfortable enough to come up and speak to me because they thought I was just this white person. And so I've seen this side of conversation that you're talking about. I've sat across a table, actually, and I can't believe that this happened only a couple of weeks ago, but this is in response to some of the riots, like the one in Ferguson, and some of the protests that have happened here even locally. I sat across a table a couple of weeks ago with a police chief of one of our local police departments and a black reverend. And the black reverend was talking about oppression and systemic racism and whatnot, and the police chief said, "If you mention oppression one more time, I'm leaving this table." Because oppression doesn't exist. And then 2 weeks ago, mind you, 2 weeks ago, I was at a Bills game, and there was a guy behind me who was yelling because they're on one of the TVs that was up around the stadium. They brought a vet out who had lost his leg. Yes, I felt awful that he had lost his leg and more. But then, of course, there's Tyrod Taylor, who has also not only a Bills player, but also kneeled during the anthem. And the guy behind me goes, "Taylor, now you tell me again how you've been oppressed." And so then I thought again and again, there's this constant denial of what's going on. And it's this constant fixation on the fact that we're all well and done and that there's no difference between black and white. And we know that's not true. Saying that there's no difference between black and white has never changed the conversation, has never diminished the conversation in any way. If anything, it just makes me feel that you just have no clue what it is that you're talking about or what you're seeing. And so I think in this age of technology, I'm really grateful that places and incidents that have happened in Ferguson and whatnot, whether it was in New York City or anything else, there's been an ability to share that information, to share that conversation, to tweet about it, and to get more involved, which has encouraged a lot of people to get involved in it. And I've seen online a lot of this, like, because again, everything you've talked about, this whole solidarity between people of color and people of different faiths, Palestinian people, whomever it is, I think it's so enlightening. I'm super glad to see so many people fixated and focused in on an issue that we know has long existed for centuries, and we know that this community of people has been oppressed for centuries. It kind of sucks that some people are paying attention only now. But again, I do think it's a sense of it's an enlightenment. enlightenment period. I really do think it's an enlightenment period for a lot of people. And I think even for those, you know, in my own community, and even going back to just my own family, we've been able to turn on the TV, and it reminds us a lot of what we've been able to see on some channels like Al Jazeera, and all the riots and all the deaths and all the, you know, the countless acts of violence that we see on our own TV made us, you know, all of a sudden we felt like someone out there was also feeling very similar to what we felt. And so then, of course, you have the United States media and whatnot that censors too much of what's going on, and you have no clue of what's really happening on the streets. But luckily, again, there's all this other social media and other channels that we can actually share this real information. But I do think, not to blabber on, but yes, it's been an enlightenment period.
I'd like to also introduce Danielle Ponder. Danielle Ponder is a justice warrior in more than one way. She's a justice warrior by day in her work as a public defender, and a justice warrior by night as the front woman of Danielle Ponder and the Tomorrow People. She speaks of liberation and freedom and self-love. Danielle, Dr. Peterson Smith talked about how the Israeli state has sought to erase Palestinians, both physically and rhetorically. And what I'd like you to respond to is, how do you see, what do you see the similarities and the parallels between how, what the Israeli state has done with Palestinians and what happens to blacks here in America? Can you respond to that from all your intersections and how you see it?
First of all, I want to apologize for being late. I had a prior engagement with my music part of my world. So I'm thankful to be here. I did not get to hear the speech, but I did go on YouTube this morning to get, you know, all the fierceness of the doctor. Okay. Oh my God, how the intersection between the two. The one thing that I can tell you is that black people, Palestinian people, created by the Creator, were giving value. We're given value in humanity. And the Israeli government and the U.S. government every day decides to take that away. There is a devaluation of our humanity, that we are people, that we hurt, that we have pain. And to me, that is one of the most deplorable things and most disgusting things you can do to a human being, is to say, you're not human. And what allows Israel to do what they do to the Palestinian people is that belief that they're not human beings. What allows, I'll localize it for you, the Rochester Police Department to do what they do to people of color who live in the city is the belief that they are not human beings. So I think we start there. Then there's a second belief that is operating, and I think that is that they are inherently criminal and violent. You are not a human being, and you are inherently criminal and violent. So because you are inherently criminal and violent, we must occupy you. We must make sure you don't move from this place to the next place, right? So in Rochester, we have young kids who are stopped for not having a bell on their bike, for not having a light on their bike. And if any of you white kids who may, you know, have grown up in the suburbs or just grew up anywhere, probably never been stopped for not having a bell or light on your bike, you probably didn't even know you had to have one, right? And so then I think about Palestinian checkpoints. And so there is this belief that they are inherently criminal, so we must contain them. So the oppressors on both ends are not treating people as more than animals. They're treated as animals in many ways. And I did a focus group with police officers from the Rochester Police Department. And in that focus group, all I could do was take notes, which was like the hardest thing I ever did in my life. He's like, can you just come and just take some notes? When I tell you, I was just like, is this real? I didn't know if I was sitting and watching the Rochester Police Department or if I was, you know, listening to interviews with the Bloods and the Crips, because the mentality and the language was so gang, it was almost gang language. And it was one officer that says, we have to make sure that these monsters don't spill over into our neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And I think that is the same language, I would not be surprised, that Israel is using. So the connection between the two has become more and more apparent to me. But at the same time, there is a strength and a resiliency in both of the people. And I would love for our community, that's why I'm so happy that this talk is happening, because I would love to our community to see that we have brothers and sisters in the struggle. I really do believe that the police force is an occupying force in Black communities. We have no say who the police are. We don't get to interview them. We don't get to talk to them. Next thing we know, some guy from Parma is patrolling our streets and then interacting with our young people. And we have no control over that. But I watch police body cams often. And one thing I can tell you, in their eyes, they're not talking to a human being. They're not recognizing another human being is standing in front of them. In their eyes, they see a dangerous animal, and they treat them as such. So I think that answers that.